Hi, I'm Josh, and here we will see the serial killer in his native habitat. Will he do something deeply emotionally affecting or interesting in any way? No, for he is not currently in a violent nature.
Ooh, spooky. Hey, I'm Matt, and I'm trying to recall the movies we watched this week. Yes, Oddity was a thing that also was descriptive of itself. But I like
ground anyway. Control to Major Matt. Come on.
Sorry, I'm trying to pull it together here. It's been a long week.
this is Trinidad Austin. I was gonna try to come up with something like some kind of like New Jersey Joe Pesci kind of character, like the demon disorder. Is it that order? What's your order? But I was like, I couldn't get like find something right. Then I was like, my brain said, I'd give up on your head or behind. whatever order you choose.
The demon disorder normally manifests when the demon is a ute.
This particular disorder is actually taking place somewhere between the sacred silence and sleep. And this is Harsha Hot Dog.
Yes, sir.
Hey, so you know what we didn't do this past week is pick a short and watch it, because that's how we are sometimes. However, instead of doing that, I'm going to say that we sent Charlie to Fantastic Fest. How did we send him? With our thoughts and prayers. He paid for the whole thing. I wanted to make sure that we get a full report. So, Charlie, man, take it away. You have to talk for at least as long as a short.
Fair enough. Well, it depends on if Matthew does one of those things where he like, oh, I picked a short. I'm like, okay, cool. And then we're going to go to record. Like, okay, 10 minutes for a record. I'm going to watch a short so it's fresh in my mind. Look at the time, 13 minutes. Like, oh, you prick.
I usually try to warn you if I pick a long one, but sometimes I forget.
No, it's okay. So I got to do Fantastic Fest. The first 2 years I did it, I did Cash Line. The first year I did Midnight of Cold Fish. Second year was Midnight of American Mary. And after that, I was like, this is my all the things. And so, yeah, this is my 12th year going to the festival. I missed a little bit with the pandemic and other stuff, but they did a remote version the first year of the pandemic. I don't really count that one, but it's been going for a long time, and it's evolved a lot. Drafthouse is now owned by Sony, which was a little bit like, you know, some people were fussing and whining about it, and I was like, well, the alternative is or it dies, and right. So I kind of like, I feel like the people at Sony kind of have enough of a wide range of their business interests that like they don't have much motivation to fuck with things that are functional. So like it seems like that's what they did. They basically just, they're not fucking with the draft house. They're not fucking with the festival. So like, they just kind of kept a little loose, you know? So that was, you know, I think all the gnashing of teeth and fussing was a little bit, you know, misplaced. So it's fine. And then this year I get to have my darling child here, 'cause he turned 21 in August, like a dipshit. And, the big thing with the festival is that they have, oftentimes they have alcohol sponsors and different things. It's like, and there's just chaos. There's people everywhere. There's, at one point they have like a trivia thing going on here. There's a drag show. There's people going out of movies, and they're like, how could you control this environment? So it's always 21 and up. So he's always wanted to go. And so then, you know, once he turned 21 earlier this year, I was like, well, what do you want to do for your birthday? And he's like, this is the one thing. They started doing that negotiation that you do when you're a kid about like wanting to get a puppy. We're like, oh, I won't have to do anything for my birthday. I want to do this for Christmas and this and whatever. And it's basically what he did. He's like, well, we don't have to do anything for Christmas. That'll be fine. Like, dude, shut up. It's fine. Like,
you know, whatever. Of course, I want to do this with you.
Yeah. Come on, man.
I realize that you're playing into my hands with a scheme I hatched when I found out you'd been conceived.
Yeah, it's like you know, your purposes are to show you many, many cool things in the world and also chores. Like, that's the reason why you're yes. around, you know, and just hopefully if you have a good personality, that's a bonus. But yeah. And in my case, yeah, he's a good dude. So it's really cool to have him. So he come down here from Colorado. He played a bit of hooky. He's like, I had a fib a little bit. Like, I have a family thing. Like, he didn't articulate what it was. And so he's like, he got out of, because all he has is upper level classes now. So it's kind of like, eh. So he had to kind of, you know, whatever. But anyway, he got down here. And so in years past, I have done upwards of 26, 27, 28, 30 movies plus blocks of shorts. This time around, I did like like 18 movies and then a block of shorts, which sounds a little light, but I just kind of got
shameful.
I just got so worn out. But I'll run through it real quick. I mean, there's a few things I didn't get a chance to see that it's worth mentioning that people have probably seen around and people talk about, like the Christopher Lee documentary. I didn't get to see. My buddy Mark did, and he thought it was great. It was really, really well done. He really liked that quite a bit. And Mad S was another one I get to see. Ick was another one. Bone Lake was another one that you're going to see pop around a bunch of festivals. So there's a bunch of horror stuff that I didn't get a chance to see. But for the stuff I did see, it's kind of a mixed bag for horror stuff. Like the one that had the one that Barbara Crampton and the lady from Nightmare on Elm Street. Why can I not think of
Heather Langenkamp?
Heather Langenkamp was we're in about this kind of like demonic kind of vampiric kind of creature living in this person's home and like kind of feeding off of this woman. It's kind of like a metaphor for like abuse and or addiction and things like that. Parts of it were really cool, and then it was kind of an underwhelming thing. Terrifier 3, we saw the world premiere of that, and it was definitely Terrifier 3.
I feel like that's what all you can really expect.
Right? He's never going to go to fucking space, right? It's just going to be a very similar experience, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the main thing. I mean, I will give him a lot of points for when they just let the main character just do his like kind of Buster Keaton thing. Like, it's very entertaining. It's just when you pack in all the rest of the stuff, it's just like, ugh. It gets a little whatever. But, you know, Damien Leone, like, I give him a lot of credit for, like, this is a very bootstraps up kind of a thing. Like, this is a very kind of just get everybody together, let's put on a show to save the community center kind of a vibe about the way he does stuff. And I appreciate that. Like, it's not really my flavor of floor wax, but, like, you know, I really admire what he's doing. And he seems like a good dude. It's just not necessarily my thing. Really?
Yeah, the sign for the incoming Spirit Halloween store at the mall that my pizza place is in has like five people in costumes on the enormous, like, you know, 30 foot by 40 foot poster. And it's like Deadpool, Optimus Prime, something else, and Art the fucking Clown.
Yeah.
Like, that's astonishing if you think of what these movies are and like what they got made for, like that there's enough cultural cachet that is like one of the costumes you advertise to get people in the door to your shop. Mm. Like, dude deserves some flowers just for like making something that has truly become a cultural icon, which I didn't expect having, you know, when we watched that first one, it's like, yeah, this is kind of wild, but this won't play with the rubes. And maybe I was the rube all along.
Well, and it's still, I mean, he's not, they've not abandoned that. I mean, there's some,
oh, for sure.
Some,
yeah.
There's some seriously gnarly stuff in this one, which, I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, I don't want to be Mr. Tight Underpants, but it's like, I kind of feel like, you know, push it to some degree, but like, it seemed like less is more even, where if you, because that was one thing with this one is that like, there's a lot of set pieces and a lot of very ambitious kind of gore bits and stuff like that. And I just kind of feel like if you took out about a third of them, and then just focus your attention on less of them, I think it would actually like play hard, like whoa, versus being like, oh, here we go, here's another thing that's gross and weird, and like, okay, we'll move on to the next one. And so, yeah, you know, I don't know. It's, but again, it's not my flavor of floor wax. It's just like some people really, that's the kind of thing that they super, super enjoy, and like more power to them. But, you know, but certainly credit to the director, Felix. I think he's done a cool thing. But in terms of the favorite things I saw, I mean, the best thing, the, and it's a three-way tie at the top. Well, no, actually, that's not true. Four-way tie at the top. Jeez, Butterman. Not all of them are 9.5. It was Saturday Night is, which is the telling of the hour and a half before the first episode of SNL, and it's basically perfect. It's like it's kinetic, and it's remind me. People, I heard some people say like kind of like Aaron Sorkin, but I was like, no, it's more like Robert Altman, like where like it's just like layers and things are occurring in the foreground, the background, like, oh, this is just this level. So you're not focused on the impersonation somebody's doing of John Belushi or what this person looks like for this or that thing. In other words, you're just like watching this like just writhing kind of pile of creativity, just to, like try to keep itself alive, and it's really something else.
Well, from the trailer, it struck me that they kind of took the same approach that A Futile and Stupid Gesture took
about
the founding of National Lampoon, or they even in that movie like break the fourth wall to say, like, look, none of these people look exactly like the people, but so what? You know, and it's more important to see what they're doing. And that movie's fucking fantastic too, and it's I'm excited to see Saturday Night.
So. It blew me away, and just how incredibly well made it was, and just like, there's nowhere to breathe, there's nowhere to go, but it's not done in like it doesn't look like Slumdog Millionaire or something. It's not like cut like that. It's not that type of thing, but it's just the way that the movement is and the way that these things are all happening in such a way. It's just a breathtaking piece of filmmaking. It was just fucking amazing. I want to try to see if I can get to take Kristen so she can see it, because I think it opens this week, I think. But it was, so that was one of the secret screenings. So we got, and it was like when they had that many screens for it, and the starting time was 11:35. It was like, I wonder if it's Saturday night. And as it turned out, it was. And then the next one, so my four-way tie at the top was, and the next one is A Different Man, which was, which is a, they kind of call it like a thriller, which is interesting, but it's Aaron Schimberg is the guy who wrote and directed it, and it's a really remarkable thing. It's, I don't know if you've Adam Pearson is the guy in real life that has the disorder of the face, where, you know, it's like the kind of elephantitis thing. And so basically in the movie, the Sebastian Stan plays this guy who has this, and through contact with this kind of clinic place, they have this like possible treatment that could possibly reduce it or change it. And so he like goes in for this trial, and it works really, really well. And so all of it goes away. And then he looks like Sebastian Stan at that point. Mm-hmm. But intermixed with this is like this on and off again relationship he has with his neighbor. And then a guy played by Adam Pearson who has this, but this other guy is very comfortable in his skin, and he's affable, and he's warm, and he has interests and hobbies and things. And so, like, as they kind of trade places in a way, you have our guy who looks like Sebastian Stan, who just cannot get a leg up in life because he's still bitter and frustrated and dejected. There's just no way to have gotten rid of it. And so, like, when you see somebody who looks like, and I don't mean this insensitively, but somebody who looks like Adam Pearson, who just looks so relaxed and calm and just happy in his skin, and you see somebody who looks like Sebastian Stan, who does not lose the physicality of what he looked like at the beginning with all the prosthetics and stuff. And it's like, that's some serious, like, top level acting. And it's very disquieting and uneasy to watch, because you're like, you don't know what he's really capable of, or what, you know, can really, you know, what is the breaking point? And so watching this, it's kind of like this undoing, redoing, undoing, and then redoing of a man kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. And at times it's tense as fuck, and but brilliantly well made and brilliantly acted. And man, it was a mother of a thing. I guess the director guy had been working on this for like this idea for like 10 years, I think. And I don't know, and I was absolutely, like I said, absolutely blown away by it. It just does an incredible piece of filmmaking. I don't know who it's for, because like it's gross enough at parts where you're like, ugh, and you know, little like, yeah, Jesus, some of the little violent points of it. But then there's a really amazing human drama in there too. So like, I don't know who the audience is necessarily, but at the same time, Parasite won Best Picture. So like, and, you know, if a bunch of squares in a multiplex can get through the last 15 minutes of Parasite, then I think they can probably deal with this too, I guess. But yeah, Different Man is a remarkable thing. And then Josh knows this, but the next thing is Wild Robot.
Oh my God, yes.
Just fucking beautiful and timeless and amazing. Just so many great everything about everything. Such a beautiful, beautiful piece of filmmaking. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Everybody should see it. Everybody should see it twice. It's a beautiful piece of work. That I hope makes more things like that, where, you know, like you get the Mitchells versus the Machines, or you get like this type of thing where you get, it's more art than it is pop culture nonsense, you know. And DreamWorks has that ability, because like they made How to Train Your Dragon, they had Roger Deakins as a cinematographer, for fuck's sake. Like, they
that's the thing is, Chris Sanders is the director of How to Train Your Dragon and Lilo and Stitch, and he's on Wild Robot, and like That is amazing. Dude has a perfect average. He has not fucked up once.
Well, and what I like about it too, and Josh, I don't know if you agree with me or you would say it slightly differently, but one of the two things outside of the hundreds of things you could say about positively about the art and everything was that, one, they don't try to shoehorn in a bunch of pop culture bullshit. Mm-hmm, and then two, they don't treat the audience, whether you're 8 or 58, they're not treating you like a stupid person. They're not explaining every note and every whatever. They're just letting it occur. And like in showing it in such a way that has kind of pantomime to it a little bit. It has some kind of old comedy things and Commedia dell'arte things and all this kind of stuff. But they're not making a big show of it. They're just sort of like allowing it to be. And it's like, Conlon pointed this out to me, like one of the moments where they're in, Elvis isn't really ruining a ton, but like they're going around because there's a big storm happening. And they're trying to gather up all the animals to get them to the safe place, whatever. And they're like going to search for them. And then at one point they're like digging into the snow for where one of the animals were. And they just kind of go and then put the snow back over it. And they continue on. And like they don't make a big show of it. They don't put a big orchestral hit. Nothing. It was just sort of like, there it is. And then we move on. And it was like a little moment, but it was just like, yeah, there you go. Like, don't treat people like idiots. Don't treat children like idiots. And it was just sort of like, and so on top of everything else, I loved that they didn't try to shoehorn in a bunch of pop culture shit and didn't try to treat people like they were dumb. And it was just a beautiful thing. I love that movie. It was so good.
I've got the gig. We're handing out little cardboard craft standees of the robot. And I put mine up on the shelf with Wally and the Iron Giant. And it is in that caliber. Like, I feel like it fits up there.
Well, and Conlon said this really beautiful thing that totally made me tear up, which was that he said, he's like, you know, he's like, there's a couple moments in that I think are a little too scary for Joe. So I don't think we can take her to the theater. But maybe in a couple years, this can be like Iron Giant is for me.
Where, oh my God, did you melt into a
puddle? Oh my God, yeah, and I was just like, this fluttering lip, and just like, and it was
and the
just
cats, you know, in the cradle and the
soul was like, of a motherfucker, like, but in really what he was getting at was the idea that like Iron Giant, you can watch now, you can watch 30 years ago, you can watch 30 years from now. This one is like that. It's time. It's utterly timeless. You can watch this 30 years from now or 30 years ago, and it still works perfectly. And it's just sort of like, and so that was, yeah, fucking phenomenal. It's just a fantastic movie. And then the next one on my list is one, it's a Belgian-French one called Night Call. And when this becomes available, and we can just, we'll shoehorn it in. It's not really horror, but it's enough that we'll make it work. You will be amazed at the fact that this was this dude's first feature. It was like, and basically what it super, super quick. So the story is, it's following this guy who's an overnight locksmith guy, like one of the mobile locksmith people in is it Brussels or is it Paris? I'm trying to remember where it's set. Somewhere in Europe. And so he gets calls and people lock themselves out of an apartment, locks out of their car, whatever. He just gets the calls and you have to pay cash and whatever. And as you're starting, he's a young kid and you're kind of like, as you're starting getting to know him, it's like, he seems like a decent kid. And basically he gets a call from this woman locked out of her apartment and goes and he's like, well, I need to see like an ID, like all my purses and the thing. And I sort of like, oh, do you have like, you know, can you describe an item in there? And okay, there's a punching bag and this and whatever. And okay. And she's been kind of flirty with him and stuff and nothing bad, but just sort of like, you know, it's a little flirty. So he kind of lets his guard down a little bit, lets her in there. And then she's like, oh, you just wait a minute or whatever. And she's like, oh, I thought I had cash. I don't have cash. I'm going to run down the ATM. Just wait right here. I'll be right back. And he's just like, okay. Like, cause he's like being flirty and nice and whatever. So he's like, he started to look around this apartment and it's like, there's like Nazi shit on the walls and other kind of stuff. And it's like, he's a blaze of black fella. And he's like looking around like, and he gets this phone call and she's like, you got to get out of there. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, but and it's just like, and then he's like, this is not so good. And as he's trying to leave, this dude shows up, altercation happens. He, in the process of defending himself, kills this guy. And then it's like, and then in the process of hearing other people downstairs, he hides and then learns that what has happened is this woman has stolen a whole shit ton of cash from a drug trafficking person. and like she's made off with the money, and like he's the one who let her into this apartment, not realizing that it's her apartment. Mm-hmm. So then becomes this like ever widening story of like, what's the deal with the drug traffickers? What's the deal with this lady? The right hand man of the drug trafficker guy seems to know this lady. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. And it's like, it's cars and it's running and it's just all these situations, like one thing on top of the other thing. In the midst of all this, there's a big a bunch of civil unrest because there's a guy who got killed by law enforcement, a black fellow got killed by law enforcement. So there's like a big Black Lives Matter kind of protesting things happening in the streets. And so like that's all happening kind of at the same time as all this is occurring. And so like the temperature level just gets up and up and up and up. And there's these sequences, these chase sequences and other kind of stuff. Where you're like, how in the fucking hell could this be your first feature? Like they're so assured and so well done. And it's just it's a mother of a suspense thing. It's so, so well made. And what's great is that like, unlike an American story where you're going to have a love story and you're going to have a clean resolution and you're going to have this everywhere else, Western Europe doesn't really give too much of a shit about all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So you really don't know how it's going to end. Like you have no clue. It's just like with about a third to go, you're like, well, could go 9 different ways. I'm not really sure. And it's like, and that's not bad. You're super engaged, but I love that because it makes the story not more authentic, but just makes it so like you're not 5 steps ahead of it. You're just like right there in the midst of this whole thing. And it's incredibly well made thing. It was awesome. So then the last thing on my top 5 then is going to be the new one that comes out, I think, first week of November, which makes perfect sense because after Halloween is Heretic. That was one of the secret screenings, and has the lady from Yellow Jackets, and has that guy from Love Actually. Whatever his name is, Hugh Grant. That's the guy. And the trailers for this make it look like one thing. Make it look like it's like a anti-religion Saw thing. Like it's like, you know, here's a series of traps and you have to test your faith and whatever. And that's a component to it, but it's got a lot more on its mind than that. And like, and they can't, you can't really portray that in the trailer necessarily, but like it's got a lot more going on upstairs. And in good conscience, I can't really talk a lot about some specifics, but like it does a really, really good job of pushing the nerves a little bit of all the religion is dumb. And then push the nerves a little bit of the, if you're just a blindly religious person, then you're dumb. And it doesn't, it's not victimizing or like posterizing anybody, but it's like, it's really looking at it with a great, clear mind, like how these things treat each other and how they should be seen. And like what they push you to in different types of extremes and different ways. And like, it's like, I didn't get any of that from the trailer. It was like, and so when you watch it, it's like, God damn, man, like they had a lot more going on than meets the eye. So, and then fucking Hugh Grant is a great villain. He's a great villain. He's really terrific as a villain. And it was just a really well made, just an excellent thing. Again, another one that I have no idea the audience for, but like, it was really cool.
I'm super excited for that one.
Yeah. Like it's a very small, but it's like, you know, it's like, well, you know, like with Renfield, it's like, I love Renfield. Renfield is great. Like, I don't know who it was made for. but yeah, it was really, really fucking good. And then just super, super fast. So Nacho Vigalondo's new one, Daniela Forever, is not going to be for everybody. I loved it. I cried. I thought it was a beautiful thing. It was like if you took a little bit of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and kind of mixed it in with like a little bit of like, I'm not going to remember the other one I'm thinking of. It's basically about this guy who has this like great relationship with this woman, and then the woman passes away. And he's having a very hard time getting over the fact that she's gone. And through a connection, the family friend of theirs does this, like, working in this lab. And they're working on this type of treatment that can allow you to be able to, like, have lucid dreams but have control over them. And then, like, and so they're working on this medicine, this drug for this. And so, like, he gets tied in with the trial to, like, see if they'll can help him with this grief. But instead of following the orders, what he's doing, he kind of like sort of recreates this reality where she's in it. And it asks these very tough questions about, like, if you could just manipulate everything in your reality, like that would be really satisfying, and then be really awful, because there's certain things you just can't control, certain things you can't fix, certain things you can't. If you remove something, like, oh, I just would have it so that you never met your ex, and like, well, then you become a different person, and like, then that shape of that changes. And so
I learned that from Ashton Kutcher.
Can't learn a damn thing from Ashton Kutcher. And so, like, it's not gonna be for everybody. It's a very slow, quiet, contemplative thing. But I thought it was wonderful. I love all Nacho stuff. You know, Mr. Time Crimes and Colossal you know. But I loved it. Like I said, I don't think it's for everybody, but it's a really lovely thing. And then super fast, Aisling Bay, my would be Irish girlfriend, and Nick Frost in Getaway, which is like was it. What's the hell is that movie with Jennifer Aniston and
Leprechaun,
Sudeikis, and Meet the Coopers,
We're the Millers.
Yeah, so take We're the Millers and like mix it a little bit with like The Wicker Man. Let's get away. Never Let Go, I thought was really good. It's very somber, very rural. Halle Berry is working her butt off of that, and that's Alejandro Aja. That's Aja. That's Dills Have Eyes and Prana.
Yeah, yeah.
That's him. And you can see it in certain parts. Like, oh, there it is. And it's like, oh, boy. I thought it was really good. It's a little bit undercooked, but it's really good. And then, Matt, I know you've already watched it, but the new VHS, Better Than the Last Few.
Oh,
by, certainly. By a good measure.
Country.
And then a couple last little things here. Our friend... sorry. Our buddy who did the Dead Snow movies, Dead Snow One, Tommy Wirkola. His new movie is a animated musical about the life of a sperm.
Oh,
called Spermageddon.
That's right. I saw that the announcement was like, that looks dumb, and then it was like Tommy Wirkola, like, nope, it's gonna be great.
And it's. When it works, it's really and really super enjoyable. Like, my side hurt from laughing at through parts of it. I think their ambitions were probably bigger than their capabilities, even though the animation looks great and it's clever and it's funny and it's sharp. Like, there's great moments in it. There's a song where two of the character in real life, the humans, are like going to the clinic or whatever else, and the doctor has this whole song about like, if you don't think that you're ready, then you're not ready. And like, you know, which radical concept in this country, but like overseas, they figured this concept out, and it's fantastic. And if any of these religious right people knew this movie was being screened, they probably would have, you know, got their inner pants in a twist. But it was, you know, it's a little obscure, little weird little thing. But so a lot of it works great, and a lot of it's super enjoyable. There are so many sperm puns and like, you know, bodily function puns, that it was fun to watch Condon's eyes roll back into his head like five times over. He's like, oh god. You know, and it's like, and there's parts that are kind of overcooked and they kind of like, you know, whatever, but by and large it's pretty fun. It's like, you know, it's a hell of a departure for Workla. But and then there's one that's gonna be on Shudder, I think, soon, that's called Daddy's Head.
It kind of looked like Goodnight Mommy
a little bit. Yeah, it's a little bit like that. There's a lot that I really liked about it, but I think it's, you know how like when we watched Long Legs, you're like, well, that was part of what could have been a really good movie. Yeah. There's part of Daddy's Head that feels that way, where you're like, you've nailed the thing that really works in this, but like, let's build that out, build that out, build that out. Like the one that Netflix did a few years ago, that fucking awesome one, was a Ritual, right? That's the one. And like, so if this was more like Ritual and less like Long Legs, I think it would have worked better. But there's parts of it that were like gangbusters. I was like, oh, poke in the butt. And so like, there's some parts that really do work for sure. And then lastly, the other series screening I was going to mention was Apprentice, the one about kind of Trump's relationship with Roy Cohn.
And
that was a fascinating experience, because like, you know, Sebastian Stan does a great job at playing dipshit. But I tell you, the one that's amazing is Jeremy Strong playing Roy Cohn. Like, if you don't know a lot about Roy Cohn, he's one of the most despicable human beings in the 20th century. He was on the side of, you know, McCarthyism. He was on the side of, you know, like every bad thing you think of, he's on the side of that. And so it's a tough role to play because he's so fucking despicable. Because then he gets sick later on. Like, he gets, you know, he gets... It's never been said, really, I don't think, but like he got HIV and AIDS and the very early stages of it. And but so it's like they don't force you to feel empathy for this pile of shit, but it's interesting to see culturally from like the 60s to like the end of the 80s where like these some things kind of moved around underneath people's feet, whether they wanted to or not. And so that is interesting. And so it's the style of the movie is done very much fly on the wall, which was really smart to do. Mm-hmm. Like it makes it feel like almost like a Vice thing or something. And that was very smart because there's parts of it that you have to kind of feel that way. And so, you know, it was quite the experience. I don't know that given the last 6 or 7 years, if you want to go voluntarily sit in a movie and sit in a theater and watch a thing about Trump for 2 hours, or whatever, but it is a well-made thing. And I appreciate what they were doing, and everybody in there does a really good job. But it was, you know, it's kind of an interesting sort of experience. But anyway, yeah, so that's I mean, I know I went way over, but that was sort of what all happened with all that stuff.
Nice.
Fabu. Yeah, there were several titles that I was very jealous that you got to see in advance. Indeed. So I'll be keeping an eye out. But let's keep an eye out or two. For Oddity, shall we? Should we talk about Oddity? Curiosidad. Yeah. Oddity is a touching story of mannequins and witchcraft and vengeance, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I was told that this was the most frightening movie to be released this year, which is always nonsense, and that it was the movie that Long Legs was trying to be, which makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get that at all.
That's a really weird comparison, yeah.
Yeah, neither of those things seem to track, because this is a very... So this is the guy who did Caveat, which I remember being like 75% of a thing.
It was interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't gel in a way, and I feel like this is the response to that, where this wraps itself up so just satisfactorily that it's not like you sit there with your jaw dropped. You just go, yeah.
Yeah, this was...
We did that.
You know, the first, I forget what it is, maybe somewhere between like 5 and 10 minutes, maybe all happens before the title card. Mm-hmm. And it is such a barrage of fascinating things that give you just enough to become incredibly fascinating before they switch to the next thing and don't resolve anything. None of it makes really any sense. You're not even sure how or if they're all connected. And then they hit the title card. And my thought was like, okay, you've set up like Chekhov's full curio cabinet. That is a very bold move before the title card movie. Cause if this shit doesn't all come up later and tie together and pay off, like, you really set yourself up for failure. And I got to the end of the movie and went, holy shit, I think I know what all those things in the beginning are now, and they all make sense. Like, I really did think that it tied together. I'm like, fucking hell, like, you basically gave yourself your own trailer as the first few minutes of your movie and then paid off. Like, well played, movie. I did not expect to like this nearly as much as I did. It was pretty cool.
It's kind of weird how Shudder has taken to the like paragraph long synopses for movies, but this was one that did have a lot going on.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you've got the couple who have moved into like an old ass manor house from way back when are trying to renovate it. And then guy is working nights at the insane asylum while lady is at home, you know, trying to put up drywall and whatnot. And so you have like inmates in the asylum, wife alone, things being very creepy. But then you have like wife is gone. Wife has a twin. Twin is psychic. Guy working at the hospital has an orderly who seems really off. And it's just like, it just keeps getting weirder until it just kind of almost collapses beneath itself, but then picks back up and keeps going.
Yeah, the orderly I thought was a real treat. I was astonished he was not played by Udo Kier. It needed to be someone. I mean,
the whole thing where
or maybe asking, Mads Mikkelsen.
Or John C. McGinley, why not?
Yeah, why not? Or John C. Reilly.
Yeah. The whole time, the whole routine that he does just to make the Cyclops joke about the guy, the kid.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's like, is that spelled with, how's that spelled? And like midway through the kid, the guy finally gets it. And just that is such a motherfucker of a moment. It just introduces how awful that guy is way more than having him like kick the crap out of somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, and the dread they managed to insert, like there's a very taut scene where while Dr. Guy is working overnight, you know, spouse is at home working on the house and kind of camping out in like a little pup tent in the, I was going to say lobby. I guess it's not a lobby in a house. Foyer, who knows, but like, you know, a man shows up and says he needs to get in because he's there to protect her, and this is like the moment where I was about ready to rage quit the film. I'm like, yeah, like no one is this dumb. Dare
open that door.
How dare you make this a choice that your character is going to make, because I was with you, movie, and they found a way to write themselves into that corner and back out of it that I thought was good. Mm-hmm. That truly surprised me. Again, like there's a couple turning points like that in this film where, despite not doing anything that's really crazy, wild, over the top or out there, like they managed to surprise me with just how deftly they handled things that other films kind of fumble like the details for. I don't know. Again, it's just really kind of a deft presentation of this story.
Well, what are the things? Oh, go ahead, Joshua.
Yeah, just real quick. I appreciate a smaller and less gonzo thing, I guess, was my thought during this. It was like, I don't want to become numb to a movie that doesn't have like it only has one exploding head. Right. You know, I don't want to be that person who's just like, oh, you know, this wasn't extreme enough, because it is a much more boutique kind of small solid thing, and I just kind of want to appreciate that for what it is.
Yeah, it's closer to like folk horror, despite not being that.
Yeah, I think it feels more like, and this is not an insult by any stretch of imagination, but it feels almost more artisan in a way, because it's like it's not going for like it's not trying to look like a Friday the 13th movie, but it's not trying to look like a total art house snob fest type of thing either, like, but it has a very craftsman look to it.
I feel like this would do a pretty comfortable double feature in style with like a Cuckoo or something like that, where it's small cast and is more about unease and oddness than it is about gore or, you know, wild set pieces.
Well, it seems like he kind of seemed to have learned. There's a snotty way to say this, but he seemed to learn that like having forward momentum is important, because like in his other one,
telling a story, like a whole ass story.
Yeah, actual plot that goes from one spot to the next one.
Yeah, like, this has a pulse for sure.
Because like Caveat has
a resolution.
Like, well, Caveat has those moments early on where you're like, God, this is very uneasy by this whole thing. But at a certain point, when you have no momentum, you just kind of like, well, I'm now sitting in this long enough that I'm like, I've gone past the point of being kind of unnerved or like weirded out, and now I'm just like, okay, I just want to find out the next thing's gonna happen.
Yeah, like, you don't want to find out that you're acclimated to the unease.
Yeah, and I think like, that's
that means you spent too long not moving forward.
I think that's what happened with Caveat, whereas this one doesn't allow that to occur, I don't think, and so you're still, there's a lot of forward momentum and a lot of just genuinely creepy bits of this. But the thing that one of my biggest takeaways with this was that, like, and I'm gonna sound like a crazy person, I think, when I say this, but it's like, there's a lot of supernatural play at play, but like, it's not necessarily consequential. Like, it's not like, you know, we're not have to rework the laws of the universe and gravity and everything fucking thing. It's like she's like this clairvoyant, can see things and objects manipulation and cursed objects and this, that, whatever. And like, that's all interesting, but it's not just so important that everything hinges on that. And it's like, And I thought that was such a tricky balance to do that, like, in a good way. Cause like, what are we used to in this kind of situation? You're used to like, it only hinges on that, or it hinges on it not being true. Like, it's like, oh, well, you think it's, you know, supernatural, but it's not supernatural. It was just Mr. Jenkins and wearing a mask or whatever and that kind of stuff.
And he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, and it's like, and so like, I love the fact that it is definitely a part of the story for sure, and it is an important part of it, but it's not like, it's not necessarily the only thing that it has going for it, because there is some human threat, and that made it like even the more uneasy. And then I have to give this guy big goddamn demerits though, because I've had the idea for a Tales of the Crypt story for a long time about this guy who has this very dedicated like spouse to be and doesn't want to end up with her, but like, because he is her whole world, he's like, well, the better way to do this would be just to kill her, because clearly, you know, she's not gonna ever get over it. So I mean, that's just logical, right? That's just being merciful. And it's like, I've thought about that idea for a long time, and I said like, and then he did it. I'm like, ah.
Yeah, that's the kind of logic
that the wrong way. Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's the kind of logic that like junior high me would apply to relationships of like, well, it would be mean to break up with her, so I'll just kind of ignore her for 2 weeks so she hates me and breaks up with me. That way she won't feel sad. It's like, oh boy.
And then this really? One, like the idea that I was like, do you think that like your dick tastes like whiskey? Like, what are you? Right. How special are you? Like, she's pretty pissed about being dragged out into like Castle Nowhere to like work on restoring tile all day while you play with the crazy people. Like, I don't know that you are her world so much as like you're an egomaniac.
Yeah, that you're just right? Wildly self-absorbed. Yeah.
Well, I love, Charlie, what you were saying about the supernatural. Like, when I think about it, if Sister Lady had just had a gun, the dynamics between the characters might have been pretty similar. Or if instead of wood guy, she just had actual guy with her, right? Like, what if she hired a bodyguard or something? Like, the story still holds together. And I think that speaks to what you're saying about like, about how it works as a story, because it works on a character level instead of just as a, like a folk thing.
Well, because anytime, and you could definitely make the argument that, like, you could definitely make the argument that, you know, if at any point, if it's not so relevant that you couldn't just chalk it up to, like, a manifestation of guilt or whatever, that, like, then that works even better because it's not consequential. You're not having to, like, rewrite the laws of gravity and nature in order to be able to tell the thing. I mean, we watch plenty of those things, of course, and that's nothing wrong with it. But it's like, I like that they kind of allowed both things to be true, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that took a lot of balls.
Yeah, I do like how just matter of fact it is, where like blind sister knows exactly what she is setting out to do, and that there will be a price to pay and that she can pay it. But she has these reliable occult items that she can use, and just as the same way you would use a gun, you know. So I thought that was kind of cool that the way that she brought that together. And then just introducing the bell that summons the evil bellboy that will kill you.
Yeah.
And then having her posthumous revenge being just mailing that to him. It was just like, I think that raised my score for this movie like a full couple of points. It's like, oh, that's so fucking satisfying. Thank you for bringing that back and having it work. Like, well, just that one tiny shot of the bellboy guy. Yeah. It was like, ah, yes.
Well, it plays so well with that. Well, it plays so well with his condescending kind of like, I just know all the things, and this is only this, and this is just merely that, and all this, and his whole thing. Where like, well, whether or not you believe in something, if it's there, it's kind of irrelevant. Like, it's sort of, yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm above all these supernatural boy, and blah, 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 and like whatever else. It's like, well, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. You're just going to get, your ass handed to you by this accursed bell. And it's like, it's great. It's like, you don't have to believe. And so many movies try to get that point across and don't really necessarily do it super good. Where like, you know, like, oh, well, I guess now I'm a believer or whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter.
I saw her face.
And so it's like, and well done on that one. And then also too, like, they could have had this be a jump scare every 2 seconds thing, but they really leaned into the atmosphere part of it, which really unnerved the hell out of me. Like, there's a few moments of this where like Jesus Christ, the fucking phone thing, where she is like, oh, just when you hear the phone, you got to make sure to answer it or whatever else. And then drops. And she's like, fuck. And it's like, just moments like that. It's just like, it's a well-made movie that can keep you held that close without having to just resort to so many jumpy nonsense. And so, yeah, it's just a well-made thing and a great evolution from his first one.
There's kind of an element of Hitchcock almost in some of those scenes. Like, it made me think of Vertigo. Or, you know, one of the just unnerving things that humans are doing to each other. And then in this one, we have our supernatural so that we can have, like, some sense of justice for this poor lady. But yeah, I think it's just that it didn't scare at all, really. And I don't care about that overly much. I just felt in this case that they could have pushed it a little farther in that direction and gone a little bit darker, but there is like a weird sense of humor around the edges of it too, which I think is just that filmmaker. He's got like that James Wan kind of occasionally just winking at you.
Well, there's a scene where,
I mean, the bunny from Caveat shows up.
You know? Yeah, it's true. That made me happy. There's a scene where evil husband is talking to his orderly henchman. And they're talking about how we have to set up this thing. And the henchman, unable to not be even creepier, is like, well, what if the motivation for the crime were sexual? And the husband's like, no, absolutely not. Nothing like that will happen. That is not the motivation. And he's like, but if, say, that were to happen along the way. And you're like, it is such
a very Ricky Gervais in The Office kind of way.
It is a very, very darkly comic way to do that, where no one's laughing, no one's winking and nodding, but like, just the idea that you can tell this guy is like a kid squirming to see if he can get that candy bar at the register. Like, and you're going, oh God, that's awful, but it's really compelling and it's really horribly funny if you're as broken as I am, I guess. But
well,
it's
that
very
the,
definitely written.
That and the thing with the sister and then the new girlfriend lady, where, you know, this whole thing about like the timing of the relationships, whatever else, and then when she's on the phone with them, she's like, she's asking questions like, you know, about the timeline, about when we got together, this, whatever else, and it's like, oh honey, she already knows. Like, what?
Yeah.
This is the way a cat fucks with a grasshopper. Like, this is not, she already knows everything. I give the movie credit for, like, you know, she gets put through the paces, but she kind of, like, I like the way that the movie treated her, because ultimately, like, isn't necessarily her fault, per se. Like, you know, none of these things are necessarily her fault, and she's not a perpetrator, and so, like, yeah, this isn't like a grudge thing where you just end up in the wrong fucking house. It's just kind of like one of those things where it's like, well, is there any reason for her to have to get, you know, get embroiled in this whole thing? Like, well, not really. And I kind of like that they just, there's not really a, you know, I don't know. It's just not a reason for that to occur. So it just doesn't. And but
like, she's not a terrible person.
It's like, you do expect when she's driving away in the car, you 10,000% expect something to go and get her, and or something, something to happen, and then it just does it, and it's like, oh, you fucking movie, you have me all on edge.
That's another thing that really works in this movie's favor, is that our vengeful witch has such a strong sense of like appropriate justice, where like, she's super pissed that she gets the wrong guy and feels bad about it. Because that's not the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to get the people who are involved, and that's it.
Right.
And so it's not like a vengeful ghost that's just, you know, you go in the house and you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, she is very, very thrifty with her vengeance, I guess. And she is just fun to watch, because she has like the driest sense of humor and of the absurd, and it's just like, I love the way she just kind of marches into the house and goes, I live here now.
Yeah, for and sure.
She's fantastic. Yeah, so the, like, overall, for me, this is, it's not perfect, but it's one of those that, like, the word solid was just invented for.
Right.
So, like, since we don't have hearts, like I do on Letterboxd, I would give it an 8 out of 10, honestly. Like, it's pretty fucking solid.
Yeah, that's actually right where I thought it fit too, the 8 out of 10. It is, yeah, it could be a little scarier. I don't think any part of it is, like, lacking, really. It's just, if we're considering our purview to be horror, this could be more scary, you know? But just as a movie, it's put together really well. I'm really happy to see, like, the growth from Caveat to this, where it's like, okay, this person I thought was interesting did a next thing, and like we so often hope, the next thing was even better. So now it's, you know, way more exciting now to hear about whatever comes after this, you know? So I hope this is someone's, like, first couple steps into filmmaking, and a decade from now they're making whatever the equivalent of, you know, Peter Jackson doing The Lord of the Rings is. That's always interesting. So we'll see. But yeah, this is a hoot. I think people should watch it.
Yeah, I'm right there in the same spot. I'll say 8 too. Like, I thought I was really, 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 really solidly put together with a good pace and a good rhythm to it. You know, it just a level of interest and intrigue, and not a lot of stupid game playing when it came to, you know, jump scares or whatever. But yeah, certainly there's a lot of it that I found very, 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 very unnerving. And so yeah, I liked it. I thought it was really good. So I'd say 8 out of 10 as well. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. Let's see, 8 out of 10. Well, actually, the murder motivation.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done. I'll say 8 out of 10. Pup tents for easy cleanup.
Oh God, that shot! Jesus Christ, that shot! Fuck,
so,
man.
Amazing.
Oh.
So amazing.
So amazing. And mine would be 8 out of 10. It's over, mannequin. I have the high ground. Yeah, I can now dork the dorkiest. It's fine. Let's take a break then, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the demon disorder and perhaps a violent nature in a violent nature.
Mm.
And near a violent nature. Based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Back in a minute.
And up next we have In a Violent Nature, or In Una Natura Violente, probably.
Okay.
Sorry, Spain. The director of this movie called it an ambient slasher.
And it actually kind of works for me.
The whole, like, in a violent nature is, like, it is shot somewhere between, like, a nature documentary and a found footage feature on trail cams, kind of.
Yeah.
So you, for a while, it feels like a lot of the camera work is going to be, like, motivated within the script, but you pretty quickly get long, steady cam, really long, steady cam shots of the killer walking through the forest as we, you know, trail behind him as he goes, as Zilch the Tori Steller says, for a fuck in the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, like, a slasher kind of happening around the edges of what the film is showing us. And sometimes we see, like, a kill from very far away from a static frame. And then a couple of them are more up close. For me, it felt like taking the things that were familiar about a slasher movie and seeing if you could leech all emotional heft or tension or excitement or interest out of them, to the point where this movie only, like, woke me up maybe twice with some of the kills, and the rest of it was just like, okay, we get it, there's a slasher that's like every slasher that's taking place here, and it's being filmed in an unconventional way to convey for the purpose of it really felt like when you go to a restaurant and order a cheeseburger, but it's a really fancy restaurant, and so what you get is a brick of congealed sea foam, and on top of that you have a gel that is meant to be flavored like beef, and then it's topped with a sesame seed bun that is actually just like a membrane full of water. And you go, fascinating, but I still want a cheeseburger. And like, I don't know, if this had been an interesting slasher movie around the edges, then I think you have something. But like, getting just the behind the scenes of kind of a shitty slasher movie, like, what does the slasher do when he's not slashing? Like, he's walking. Oh, man, okay. So yeah, this did not cast a deep and abiding spell over me at all. I was just sitting there going, why did you do any of this? So someone who liked it better than that is welcome to step up to the plate. I just had to talk about how this movie hurt me.
So I think I was like, I don't know. Like, it was, there's parts that I think worked, that were interesting. But I think there's parts that I did find interesting, but it was like,
I should say the one thing that got me was when he turns the girl into a Mobius strip.
Yeah.
I was like, that is clever and gross and from an entirely different movie. Okay, Chrissy.
Well, that was that actually kind of speaks to what I was just going to, actually what I was going to say, which is that, like, at times this one, you know, like the it seems to have a really hard time with tone, where, like, it's, you know, some of the kills are like blah, like it feels like something out of Hatchet.
Yeah, made me think of that too.
You know, and I think so. It feels like Hatchet, and it's like, okay, well, fine. But like, then make the whole thing be like Hatchet. But then you get into this very much, you know, more serious kind of thing, and it's sort of like, so I don't know. I just kind of I struggle with it a bit, because it's sort of like some of the kills are cool, but the longer the movie went along, when more of that kind of stuff happens, I just kind of go like, it's like, yeah, but you kind of rob it of its sort of melancholy a little bit for being kind of goofy, and so it's sort of like, you know, and then yeah, to Josh's point, there are moments of this where it's sort of like, it's like, motherfucker's on the third kilometer of his 5K walk.
Like, can I tell everyone, because I'm telling everyone, my quip about this that I'm so proud of is, there is so much walking in this movie, it's technically a Lord of the Rings sequel. They do like the walking. But there are... It is just weird how some of these moments play off each other. Because, like, the Mobius strip girl is just a... That's a Friday the 13th kill.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure, yeah.
But then, like, the lumber splitting thing is, like, purposefully very, very slow. And meant to just show maybe the banality of this, or, you know, that... what it would actually be like to take somebody's arm off with one of these things. And it just does get back to that, like, what are you trying to do? And, like, how do you feel about this? If I felt anything about this killer, like I did with, you know, Leslie Vernon, or if I felt something about these people, and then it would be like, slashers are usually fun, but now you've given this alternate angle where we can see kind of behind the scenes of things. And now I feel now it's like a heavy thing. That would be something, but I still don't know what this guy thinks about slashers and why this at all. Help me.
So
make it make sense.
You know, a comparison that will, based on what you guys have said, assuredly get me banned from voting on the Academy Awards from now on. I'm going to say that this is sort of the Skinamarink / zone of interest of slasher movies.
Like, yes, Skinamarink is, I had a very similar reaction to.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, I think, the only person that liked that. But I do think that is kind of where this lands. I think the unconventional framing of what is, you know, ostensibly a pretty run-of-the-mill 80s slasher type movie, is the sort of skin-wearing part. And I think if there is a lesson to be pulled from this about what the director or writer, or maybe it's the same person, I don't remember, may or may not, I guess, think about slashers, or in this instance, is, I think, closer to that sort of zone of interest thing of just the banality of evil, which I think is... that's part of what works so well for this for me, I think, is the like your standard, let's say, Friday the 13th camp slasher type thing, or even like I Know What You Did Last Summer famously has that, like, what are you waiting for? You know, I'm right here type moment. And that moment happens in this film from like 100 yards away from where we are following Duder in the woods. And you're hearing this person give that impassioned, we've been pushed to the brink, you know, we're crumbling type, you know, emotional climax for these characters before they either are going to all get wiped out or dig deep and, you know, fight back and overcome. And the juxtaposition of that being played somewhat faintly way in the distance with someone who couldn't care less about their big emotional payoff, I think is meant to be like, this is how fucked they are. You think they're fucked in these other movies where you're following them around and you're seeing how scared they are. This thing doesn't even care that they're scared. It's not doing the thing that like The Conjuring does or whatever, where the demon or the ghost or the killer apparently wants to scare you a lot before it actually tries to hurt you. This thing isn't interested in scaring anyone. It's just going to kill stuff. It's the same thing that happens as if you ran into a grizzly bear with cubs. There's no like, haha, I will taunt my prey before. No, it's just thwap, you're dead. And that all, I think, kind of comes together to get you that, like, these, similarly to maybe how Charlie would talk about like The Grudge being like, it, once you move into the house, it's done. Nothing else that happens matters. You're done. You went to that building. And I feel like this is giving that same thing for the slashers, for that same level of despair. I think the couple of kills that are kind of more gnarly and in line with what we're used to seeing in a slasher, as cool as they are as a standalone set piece, they're jarring in this film and like this in this setting. But I think that might be perhaps a not successful attempt at trying to show that the stakes are high. This is that kind of threat. If you never see a kill, you'll know that people are dying, I guess. But like, we're showing that, yeah, this is Hatchet. This is Friday the 13th. This is all those insane things. That's how fucked all this is when it's happening to someone, but it is done completely emotionlessly.
I gotta throw in though, weird though, that you could get that one and like the bandsaw one.
Right.
And then a lot of them are just like chucking an axe at a guy.
Yeah.
Because again, like, I think, once you don't keep going back to that tone.
And I think that's part of trying to keep it mundane. But I just think I don't know of a way to show that the stakes are high and the deaths will be awful without showing at least one or two, but then also having this completely workaday, just get hit with an axe and it's over type thing, or just snap someone's neck type thing, to show that there's no real, like, cleverly malicious Freddy Krueger level of intent. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Your flesh is not my canvas. Your flesh is my toilet paper. Like, I guess that's
and canvas. And our love too. Is like water.
Yeah. For chocolate. So I don't know. I guess that's a lot of weird shit. And I find myself increasingly, I think, drawn to weird shit. So this just kind of worked for me. I had a good time watching this.
Well, and then the kind of to Josh's point about the kind of the ruralness of it, the phrase that about 2/3-ish of the way into this, I think, was around when I was thinking this, was like the phrase "jug face meets hatchet" was like the phrase that kind of, because they really do play up in the kind of like the background of the killer to a point. Sure. You know, and so they kind of like, you know, we get into that kind of thing. And so that's where I get go back to that tone thing again, where it's sort of like, if we're going to go more hatchety, like, cool. I mean, I'm good with that, but it wasn't really entirely that movie, but it also wasn't entirely like Jug Face either. So it's kind of like, you know, as an exercise, I mean, there's some interesting kind of creative ideas happening, but ultimately, like, I don't know. It's like I kind of came out of the line of, like, pick a lane.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like
Have something to say.
Because I liked it, I think I feel like there's probably a lane that was picked. They were unable to show us clearly where that was. Because I think you're trying to do... Maybe they tried too hard to make sure we understood that this was a slasher movie and was ostensibly off screen following all the slasher rules. And rather than just kind of trusting us to know that based on the premise, they thought they had to, like, hey, you know, like a slasher, like this, right? And maybe that was just a little too hand-holdy and that muddies the message. I don't know. And I might just be a terrible apologist for this because I enjoyed it, but...
No, I like hearing the different read on some of the stuff for sure. Because
I do think... I was just real quick going to say, if you're curious about this based on us talking about it, you'll know in 10 minutes if it's for you or not.
Yeah.
Because it gives you what it is, and it is just that. So, like, if you want to try it, yeah, give it a shot, and you'll know real quick.
I do kind of feel like if I were, like, in a comedy sketch about my life, and people would keep coming up to me going, I have this great idea for a movie. It's like an 80s slasher, but... And then I would just punch them in the face. But it would just be constant. Like, people kind of like, hey, man, I have this great idea. It's an 80s slasher, but stop. No.
The first person that doesn't have a butt at the end gets their movie made. Yeah.
It's just that I think I'm just done. I'm done with an homage to an 80s slasher. I'm done with... like purposefully inverting the tropes of an 80s slasher, or like slavishly recreating one. Just like, fucking fine. It was 40 years ago. Like, every single bit of this form has been explored. And if you're going to drag it out of the grave and dissect it again, like, you better have a really fucking solid reason. Like, Final Girls managed to do it because it wasn't just a slasher parody. It was a, like, time travel mom and daughter emotional thing, like,
right,
a something to say, a something. And I really felt like this was just a form for form's sake thing, and I was like, I'm just not excited about that. There was also, by the way, some shots that really reminded me of Angst. In a way that I never want to be.
That's the way it should bag. Yeah.
Yeah, where it was just like, you're not going to believe that he walks across this field and into this building unless you see every goddamn step.
Yeah, I think
so. We're going to put the camera way the fuck back where you can barely see what's happening, and you're going to watch this dude walk all the way up here, and then you will truly believe that he made that journey. I was like, I don't need that. You can just show him, like, on the other side, and then cut through the magic of filmmaking to the next bit of your fucking story. And what is your story?
Yeah, that's good.
So I kept getting stuck.
Well, and it kind of like give me 2 seconds. Let's see if I can reform this thought in my head. Come on, brain. You had this, buddy. You had it. It was right there. It's a puppet slasher. Oh, yeah, there you go. So basically, like, you know, not everything has to be the same, but if, like, in a world of the Final Girls and Totally Killer Spontaneous and Lisa Frankenstein and these type of things, like, when you have people taking these setups and changing them and doing things with them, then you just kind of can't do the same thing anymore. And so, like, ultimately in this kind of scenario, it's sort of like, are we that interested in this character, or what part of this character are we interested in? And it's like, this is not really, you know, I don't know. It's just sort of like there's a big kind of that just sort of doesn't really ever get a payoff necessarily. And it certainly had moments, you know, but it just kind of, it's one of them flat pancakes.
So a good pancake.
I like a little bit of junk in my pancake trunk.
My pancake, sure. My pancake trunk brings all the boys to the yard or something. Yeah. I'm not sure.
My pancake has hips.
You can do side bends or sit ups, but please don't lose that
butter pancake.
I was like, Pat, sure. Oh, that's terrible. Okay. I've sensed that a lot of people are excited about this movie, and I've seen very many very good reviews of it. I did think it was weird that a lot of the reviews talked about the brutality of the kills, and I think that like the effects work was neat.
Yeah,
but they didn't have any heft to them because I didn't care about anything that was happening.
Well, it sure didn't seem like that was the point.
Yeah.
That wasn't what you're supposed to get from it, like a Terrifier movie. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's actually, Josh, by you saying that, it reminded me of what I was going to say, which was that the scenes with our killer creature thing guy, where he's like, oh, I have bent the body this way, or I have done this thing, or I have stuck this thing in this thing or this thing. And he kind of did a little, not the head turn to the point where it's like Halloween, but it's like a little bit of that kind of, like, I'm observing my environment, or that kind of whatever. I was thinking about how, and I'm not recommending that people watch this movie, and especially if you've not seen it, you don't necessarily have to really ever see it. But, like, Last House on the Left, where, like, there's that scene after the scene where like they're walking away and the lead guy is like got grass stuck into the blood on his arm and his hand, and he like kind of picks at the grass a little bit and he kind of like looks at it for a minute and like kind of like, oh Jesus, kind of like almost like a Jesus, what have I done thing, and then they just start laughing. And then it's just sort of like, it's like this, and you're like, I am looking at humans that are not humans, kind of a moment in that movie. And it's very upsetting. I mean, I've only watched Last House like a couple times, you know, and it's just, that part is so upsetting and it's just so gross and it's like, I think that's what they're trying to evoke in certain parts of this. And I just like, oh no, you've not brutalize the viewer to the point at which you can then show that kind of like a like the human is trying to reconnect with his humanity and just can't, like they don't really have that same kind of this isn't that kind of rodeo kind of a thing, you know. And like I think that's maybe what they're going or aiming towards. It just wasn't didn't have the same weight, I guess. This is what I'm getting at.
So I think like there is some kind of there, it's just not the there that I was here for.
Well, you're neither here nor there.
Yeah, near, far, wherever you are. So for me, I regret to inform you that it's like a 2 out of 10. Then I'm walking in Memphis.
Oh,
my heart. Walking with my feet 10 feet off the beat.
Yeah, I enjoyed this more. It is... Yeah, in our ever-increasing column of your mileage may vary being the takeaway from most movies, but like I enjoyed this. I recognize that I think from conception this was not going to be for everybody. But I do think there's some cool stuff there, and I think this will be, you know, also another one of those that falls into the category. I'd love to see what they do next, because maybe the same of talents applied in a different direction to something else will hit in a different, more easy to digest way. And that'd be cool too. So for me, yeah, I think it's fair to give it like, I'll say 6.5 out of 10. Six and a half out of 10, Mobius stripped.
Oof.
That's my burlesque name.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go, I think, like kind of in the middle. I'm going to say just a hair under Switzerland. I'm going to say 4.5. I say 4.5, but not a malicious 4.5. It's just sort of like, it's just the wide open spaces and no new faces that kind of made it stretch a little bit too long. And yeah, there are parts that work, and I think there are parts that click, but it's just tonally, it's got 5 different tones, and I don't think it earns those kind of like hefty humanity man thing moments. And so I just kind of, you know, I don't know. It would be interesting to see what they do and what they can, you know, build on from there. But this was definitely a different thing than I was expecting, and it was just not its fault. But it, you know, it's just kind of so yeah. I'd say 4.5 out of 10. Four and a half out of ten. I sat around a lot of campfires in my time as a camp counselor, mm-hmm. kind of things. I don't ever remember a conversation being that fucking slow. Out of 10, because that scene, am I wrong in thinking that that scene was 12 hours long?
I'd forgotten about it, but it was irksome. Yeah.
Like, my God, please, please move this along.
For God's sake, someone throw a pie.
Just like, Jesus.
Just throw one of them into the fire. Like, it's yeah, fine.
That works too.
Just randomly introduce a Sasquatch. Like, oh, this is Jeff. Like, is it J-E-F-F? No, it's G-E-O-F-F. Oh, fuck off, you.
Oh, pretentious Sasquatch.
Yeah, he goes through his Wiccan phase and becomes geode.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, dear God. Okay, let's see. We want to talk about the demon disorder, or desorden de demonios. Whenever you see the word demon in the title of a movie, unless it's Demon Wind, you figure you're going to get some kind of exorcist-y kind of thing.
Yep.
And just, you know, there's a set of tropes and a set of expectations that you have with it. This one, I feel like, takes it in a completely different direction, starting with that it really appears like this is a metaphor for alcoholism and how it, you know, can be passed down in families, and, you know, like a disease that lives inside of you kind of deal. We have the lovely and talented John Noble holding it down here as the dad who has some kind of sickness that causes him to occasionally go all black-eyed and crazy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we've got three brothers who dealt with dad until finally dad could be dealt with no more, and they had to deal with him in a more final way. And later find that little brother's acting a lot like dad. And then maybe all of them are a little more like dad than they want to admit. And like, maybe there is something inside of them that needs to either be born or cut out of them, right? Like, so it has so much more on its mind than just like, maybe the Catholic Church was right.
Right.
So yeah, it goes in that category with When Evil Lurks, where it's like, sure, they're going to talk about demons, but it's not, you know, there's no old priest, no young priest.
This isn't your father's exorcism.
Which father was it?
Yes, the witch father. That's the one.
Witch father John Rawl.
This is my witch father, John Rawl.
I never knew my real father.
This is his wife, Rawl Julia.
God, this is going well.
I'm guessing I'm gonna be the high man of a total pool. Like, I thought this was great. Like, I just like,
oh, I did too. I hadn't even begun.
I may be the lower one, but not in a bad way. If there's that to steal the phrase from Charlie, this is the this is not an evil. It just didn't quite work for me, but boy, do I like a lot of the ideas.
Well, and part of what, like, you know, and this is like a very strange observation. Part of what makes this really work is the fact that it's Australian. Like, I think that's part of what makes this jive, because there's still an element of humor at parts of this without trying to make jokes, but there's still an element of humor. And so there's a little bit of that in there. And then there's a little bit of like, what the fuck? And then then there's some, like, some real humanity in there too. And they're all kind of competing for space, but not in a way that's like galling, where you're like, well, God, just pick something. It's like, they're all kind of existing concurrently. And so at any given point, you're like, this is fucked. But also, like, that was kind of funny, but I'm really kind of feeling for this brother, but I'm really hoping they figure this part out. Like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, well, maybe this is going to happen a different way. And it's like, no, okay, no, we've got a solution-based plan now. Okay, all right, we're going this way. And it just kept that weird Australian rhythm, where it was sort of like, it, you know, at any given point, you're like, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen at any given point. And it's like, and it's so hard to do. And it's like the only people on the planet that seem to know how to do it is the Australians.
Yeah, Australia is the only continent that could give us like Wake and Fright, mm-hmm. Wolf Creek, and then this.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, you think about something
and
like
Young Einstein.
Oh, yeah. Of course, yeah, Young Einstein.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, and like, yeah, I mean, you get there's this kind of like everything all exists all at once. And that shouldn't work, but at any given point, it was just sort of like, I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. And every time they start to get some directionality to it, you're like, well, is this going to be like some a bigger kind of a thing? And then it becomes kind of like, it's a living kind of situation. Like, there's almost like this resignment. Like, well, we have to figure this part out. And the cops show up, and then this thing happens. And it's sort of like, then there's some real human shit in there. And then it kind of goes in a different kind of direction. So like they balance that kind of like, you almost say like maudlin kind of at times, yeah, feel to it, like where there's like, oh, this is just a cursed family. Like, well, not necessarily, but it's like there's a curse upon them in this kind of way. And then there's some real raw human shit where like when dad's got some stuff going on, like there's some parts where kid gets smacked around and like there's some kind of heavy stuff, and then there's some really warm stuff too, and it's all kind of happening at the same time. So you really don't have, here's your defined villain, here's your defined only good person. It's like they're just these things that are, and it just feels like Australians get that idea. Like I just was watching Upright recently with Tim Minchin, which if you've not seen it, it's a really lovely thing where you expect all those American beats and like the father-daughter road trip movie kind of show. But it's like no. We're going to give you some raw shit and then some funny shit, and we're going to kind of mix it all together in this sort of forward-moving plot. And it's like, how does all those things work? And it's like, it's because we're Australian. It's like, okay, cool.
Too right.
It's a magic that works in the same way that like certain Korean movies work a certain way, or like certain Spanish movies work a certain way. And like, it's hard to put your finger on it, but part of what really made this kind of jive was this steep, deep cultural dynamics between these brothers and the taking the piss. Like, it goes beyond the British level of taking the piss. Like, this is the Australian level of taking the piss, where it's sort of like, I'm just going to insult you for 10 fucking minutes. And it's just sort of like, and you have to, as an American viewer, you have to just kind of sit with it. And it's like, all right, well, Jesus Christ. But it's like, okay, well, no, they're not really being serious. But then you get a couple flashbacks that have some serious shit in there. You're like, oh man, that's some dark stuff. And it makes you think about like either people you know, or maybe people in your own family, that if a parent started to go through dementia or other kinds of things.
Dementia is the thing I had clocked, I think, as the
and metaphor. That was, yeah, like where you think somebody's all calm and even and good, and then they start lashing out and start hurting somebody, and they, you know, it's like it's just that thing, and like, oh, that's heavy. And it's like, okay. And so there's this kind of balancing act that they take in there that I found very, very impressive. And then just the whole second half, like being like, I don't know what the ever loving is going to occur. Like, I have no idea.
Cause like it starts to manifest as a physical wound on somebody and then slowly grows. And then you see that there's a thing inside of it that needs to be taken out. And I don't know. I didn't see it so much dementia as just alcoholism.
Yeah, I think that's probably the better metaphor. But
Dad was constantly drinking.
Yeah,
and you know, you have somebody who is just, you can never tell which version of them you're going to encounter.
Yep,
and eventually is just, you know, it like leads to a chaotic, dangerous place, and then you see the brother who stayed with younger brother is constantly drinking, and new guy and older brother who left is sober and has been since they killed Dad. Right. So like, I really liked how that was all kind of woven in there, and it could have been less subtle, but it works. It's weird to say, like, one of the things that we liked about this was that it had those moments of humor and then like dark humor and then heavy. When I just finished saying pick a tone for fuck's sake to In a Violent Nature. But I do think that you can do that properly, because life is sometimes just ridiculously funny and stupid. And then in the next minute, it's tragic. And yeah. You can fall on your ass and laugh, or you can fall on your ass and break a hip. And sometimes you do both, right? Yeah. And so it can be done, and it is done here, I think, that it just feels natural instead of like they didn't figure out what they wanted their movie to be.
Yeah, I think...
And that's subjective.
The difference, you know, I think maybe is just when you feel like there's intent to mm-hmm. something that you maybe can't quite grasp, then there's a reason to give it a little more leeway. I do think that as much as I liked some of the ideas, and I think the performances are great in this, I think I just felt a little adrift in like the third act. It's been a long time since I watched this now, and I don't hold things in my brain very well, but I remember thinking the setup was interesting and kind of figuring out sort of what was going on and like, all right, cool. And then having a bit too much happen for me to really latch onto something and like sink my teeth in a way that made me emotionally invested the way I think I would have hoped to have been, or the way this movie clearly did for others. But again, it's that weird thing of like, while for whatever reason, I wasn't like emotionally moved by this, but I in no way am saying it's like bad or flawed for that. I think that's just my own weird read on it, when, you know, it's that whole, I don't know, I can't argue someone into loving it, but
or out of a boner.
Yeah. We'd get around
to an inside eventually. Dog, it's too dark to fuck.
God.
He has no pussy. Well, so I don't know if you want to read
this. Well, thankfully I could edit that out. Unfortunately, I'm probably not gonna. No, yeah, that would involve editing, which is against our rules.
It's beneath us.
And I've just made up. Oh, yeah, this one, like, I felt like it worked on that, like, metaphor level. I felt like the ways were not necessarily subtle, but they also weren't too ham-fisted, and it seemed kind of a believable depiction of somebody who is supposed to be keeping you safe and is sometimes this great person, but is just out of their mind all the time. And then just the gross demon things that came out of people by the end of this was not what I was expecting for a direction, and ended up being pretty impressed with that. So, you know, it's not quite the like home run that Oddity was, but it's pretty close. So I would say this is like, 7.5 out of 10. You know, 7.5 out of 10. Mike and also the mechanics.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. Weirdly, I'll give this like a 6.5. Yeah, 6.5. I think that's weird. Like, I guess from In a Violent Nature, that's like, this is pretty awesome, but it has some flaws. Whereas with this one, it's like, this is probably better, but that's about how much I liked it. So it's
that's all
somehow that
that's
averages out to the same thing. Yeah. So like, it's another one that I think is, if you're at all curious about it, I think you should definitely see it. Because it is definitely doing some interesting things, and, stands up as a pretty solid film. So, I respect it more than I maybe had fun watching it, but that's cool too. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'll be going a little bit higher. I'm going to say 8. I really dug it. I loved just the kind of the weird upsy downness of how it was all coming together, the kind of dark humor at moments, and just the how it all manifested itself together was just a real mother of a thing. The one it reminded me of a little bit, which just doesn't make a damn bit of sense, was that fantastic movie many years ago, kind of low budget deal, The Revenant, not the Leonardo DiCaprio one. The guy mm-hmm. who has the kind of consumptive sort of zombie thing, and like that was a lot more low budget and maybe a little less directionful, but it was like the reason why it reminded me of it is just like it has that thing of being like, as Josh says, you know, like at one point things can be funny, at one point things can be tragic, but it's kind of it's all kind of happening all in the same way, and like that's a tough thing to pull off and not seem like you're either a jerk or you're just not, you just don't get it. And then sort of like, and so for them to pull that off the right way is just, was really nifty. And so, yeah, so I'll go, let's say I'm going to go 8 out of 10. You shot your foot. Like, well, I didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, weird little thing. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about things that we're going to talk about in a future date. All right, so next week we're going to look at some movies that have just dropped on various services. We have VHS, something or other, the latest one.
Beyond.
Beyond, which apparently is a, I don't know, better than the last couple. So with cautious optimism, we dive in on Shudder. Salem's Lot finally got released on Max. And despite tepid reviews, I'm excited to see it. And then we got Apartment 7A on Paramount, which I believe is some kind of Canadian slasher. So VHS, Salem's Lot, Apartment 7A. And I've been Josh this entire time. And I'm going to say goodnight. Probably for the best.
Yeah. Sweet. Did we do the short called The Knife yet? I'm gonna say no. So we'll do the short called The Knife. That will be on the website for this episode if you want to just find it there. Otherwise, I believe that one was on YouTube. Anyway, but yeah, for sure you can always find it on the website. Speaking of websites and content and things, the recent episode of Slaughterhouse Princess about the film Night Beast features yours truly as a guest host.
Night Beast.
As there were travel plans and other things preventing anyone but Chris being able to record. So he was kind enough to invite me on the program, and I chose Night Beast as the movie to watch because fuck, that movie's awesome.
Night Beast.
As I sold it to Chris, I believe it will have the longest and craziest redneck versus alien laser / gunfight you've ever seen. And then it has another one that's nearly as long. It's a hoot. The movie's on Tubi if you want to watch it, and that episode is on Slaughterhouse Princess's feed. You can also, if you want to chat with them or myself every now and again, you can go to their Discord, which you can find on the internet. All that being said, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and go see a movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun experience. It's this new thing. It's just recent, but give it a try. You might like it. And we'll talk to you pretty darn soon, I'm guessing. Or I don't know. It's all relative, really. If you're asking a turtle, it's a very, very short amount of time. If you're asking
geologically,
like,
it's instant. Yeah.
Yeah. It's or the opposite is true. Whichever one's correct. With that, we'll bid you a fondue. Thanks later. Bye.
That's what's with the beard and everything. It's a disguise.
And the beard went away, and so did the long hair. So
you're gone.
I'm now back to a goatee and short hair because I just decided it was time because I realized I was thinking about my hair, and that's my cardinal rule, is your haircut has to be something you don't ever think about. So my sweet Ecuadorian couple told me when I came in with short hair and the goatee, they're like, we use Google on our phones to talk to each other so we can translate shit. It's a sweet little, 4'2" Miriam who can say hello and thank you in English. That's it. Taps on her little phone and turns around. And she goes, "You look good. You have your beard has gone into padlock mode."
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I just lost it laughing. She's laughing. Her husband Enrique is laughing. And she's like, "That's what we call it in Ecuador, padlock." Like, I get it. It's fucking hilarious. Like, you rule, little abuela.
Padlock.
Yeah, that was a hoot. So, anyway.
So, if you just have a handle, like a that mustache that goes all the way to your chin, that's just like the hasp.
I guess maybe, or like the carpenter staple, like shingling staple. It's just ridiculous. I don't know. But
I got shingles. No, not shingles.
Nope. That's nope. Pull up.